Welcome back, folks. It's Locked On Chiefs on a Wednesday when you see this. So we have to talk to Matt Derrick. We are contractually obligated at this point, and it just makes me feel good. So we're going to get into what should have happened, what did happen, what's not going to happen, as well as all the fallout from the actual game. Welcome to Locked On Chiefs.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. From the land of the free and the home of the Chiefs, this is the Locked On Chiefs podcast.
Matt Derrick, editor-in-chief of Chiefs Digest. How are you, boss?
I'm doing pretty well, Ryan. It's been almost 48 hours since we last talked, and so definitely time to catch up again.
I hope that you had some sleep in between.
Oh, I definitely made room for some sleep.
Okay, good. That's a plus. This was kind of a hair-raising week, I think, more so in the aftermath than during the game itself, I think. Before we get into the Brigham roll, just 48 hours later, I feel a little bit more like, hey, they took the best shot the Browns had, and this team felt pretty resilient to me after struggling through parts of the day. I feel more that it's a good omen now than I did 48 hours ago. How do you feel?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, especially taking all of week one into consideration. I mean, to me, you know, I feel like this is just a case of the Chiefs having one of those qualities that you just don't find in some of the other top contenders in the league, and that's composure. I mean, they've got that. I mean, I don't think that the Browns are there yet. I don't think the Buffalo Bills are there yet. You know, as far as those teams that just have that ability to, you know, play big at the end, make key plays. The Steelers are probably in that category of having composure because they've got a veteran quarterback and they've got an experienced defense and a lot of other veterans around Ben Roethlisberger. But, you know, to me, I mean, you know, that's the thing. I mean, these other teams, these up and comers have not proven that they've got that composure factor yet to just keep calm and keep playing and be able to play all 60 minutes. And that's something the Chiefs have in spades, and they've been proving that over the last 3 years.
They have. I'm pretty excited about it. And you set me up perfectly for the composure topic, because the big thing that just won't go away, no matter how hard I try for the last 2 days, is this whole altercation on the sideline. Greg Lewis defending Clyde Edwards-Helaire, the Harrison ejection back and forth. Was there a call? Wasn't there a call? At the end of the day, after we've watched it umpteen times on review, has anything changed for you? How do you feel about this particular incident?
Yeah, I mean, if anything, I mean, it's some of the criticism that I've seen of Greg Lewis, I think has probably fired me up a little bit more in the other direction. I mean, because was Greg Lewis in the wrong, deserving of a penalty? Absolutely. Did it raise to the same level of what Harrison did in response to him? No, not at all. I mean, Harrison's, and in the NFL circles, I mean, that's the thing, is that it's the guy who usually responds who gets in the most trouble. And in this case, Harrison's response was trouble worthy. I mean, you can't touch an official. You can't touch a coach. You can't touch somebody on the sideline. I mean, that's just the borderline. And as Andy Reid, you know, was, and part of my feeling is definitely influenced by Andy Reid, because I've very rarely seen Andy Reid defend anyone as much as he was defending Greg Lewis, mm-hmm. saying, look, that, you know, Harrison was on our guy. Harrison was on Clyde Edwards-Helaire and wasn't getting off. And that's all that Greg Lewis was trying to do, was separate Harrison from Clyde and get him off his player. And was it a lift? Was it a shove? I am not sure I can qualify what Greg Lewis did as a shove necessarily.
I'm glad that you pointed that out. I completely agree. And I'm glad that you point that out. And folks, I swear to God, I'm not going to talk about this the rest of the week. Matt will set us straight and then I will shut up about it. But two things. I hear this complaint from some of the national media that he was bumped into Clyde. He was not. He chose to step on him. That was the process. I agree with you. It was more of very much a reminiscent for me after a pile when guys are kind of getting it and the refs are like lifting and pushing and getting guys to separate. That's all it looked like to me. And I will tell you this too. The spot on the replay that this foot was landing was maybe the least guarded spot on a player's body in the NFL, right in the midsection. This is more than just a possible injury. This could be like serious internal injuries if this is allowed to happen. So kudos to Greg Lewis. I'm starting to get fired up now, but at the end of the day, what's your expectation for the fallout from this particular thing?
I imagine it's done. I mean, I'm sure that Harrison will get a fine from the NFL. I mean, that's par for the course when you get disqualified from the game. I'll be very surprised if anything happens to Greg Lewis. I mean, maybe there'll be some sort of punishment. there could be, and maybe it's a double secret probation we don't hear about, and a fine of some sort. But I mean, like I said, there might be something just associated with, because there was a unsportsmanlike conduct penalty assessed against the Chiefs bench. And sometimes, maybe there will be a fine just as par for the course. But you know, after this, I mean, I think that if anything, there will probably just be a reminder from the league telling everybody, no, you know, you can't do this on the sideline. You can't get in these altercations. You can't touch coaches. You can't touch guys on the sideline.
Okay. I'm glad we're in the same spot. That said, somebody that will get touched is going to play in the AFC West next week. And before we go into the nitty gritty about the Chiefs and Browns and what it all means, AFC West went 4-0 last weekend. Does that surprise you? How do you feel about that process and the division that the Chiefs are leading?
Yeah, it surprised me a little bit just because I didn't, you know, think that the AFC West teams had really favorable matchups. I mean, I thought the Raiders were going to lose even at home on Monday night. And I thought, you know, but that was probably a week or two ago before the Ravens had all their injuries. Maybe that made the game a little bit more even. Denver on the road. Yeah, that was a favorable matchup for them against the Giants and the Chargers too. But those were both road games. So I didn't expect the AFC West to sweep both of those. So, I'm a little surprised. 3-1 would have been a good record, but 4-0 for all of them. I mean, and the way that they won some of those games is pretty impressive.
I think it's a good thing for everybody, including the Chiefs, because it keeps them on their toes. That this isn't a laydown division this year, at least not for week one. Let's see if they can keep it up. But we got to get into where all the players are, what we're expecting going forward for the second week. We're going to do that right after this. It is that time of year again, and the football teams are back. The gridiron action is about to start, and I'm pretty excited about it. As always, BetOnline is your number one spot for all the pro and college action that you want to get into the game. Get all the odds, props, contests, and the biggest $500,000 mega contest, as well as the world's largest $200,000 NFL Survivor contest. They're all over there right now at betonline.ag. Head to the website, use your mobile device or anything else. You get 100% welcome bonus if you use our code, that is Locked On, for the promo code. And be sure to take advantage of the opening day bets. You get that full refund, even if you lose. BetOnline's the fastest, easiest way to bet all of your action for every sport that you care about. BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. We are back. It's Matt Derrick from Chiefs Digest. And Matt, a couple of key injuries. We heard a little bit of peeps and whispers here from Andy. What's your expectation for Frank Clark and for Tyrann Mathieu here as we get ready to recoup from the Browns?
Yeah, Tyrann Mathieu I would expect to be complete, ready to go for the Ravens. I don't think that'll be any problem at all. Should be back on the field for practice on Wednesday, and the Chiefs certainly don't feel like there's anything that's going to be holding him back. One thing he needed to get back into game action was practice time, and he'll get that this week. Frank Clark, I got to think he's going to be closer to being ready this week. He was close this week. Practiced all 3 days and was literally a test out on Sunday morning. See how that hamstring was. Got to think with another week of just slow build up and a little bit more rest, that's got to be good. If he was 50-50 over this past game, I probably think he's got to be at least 75% to play this week, and that could get higher as we go along.
I'm glad to hear that, because that's kind of how I feel about it too. But I think it's also very, very important, and not to take away from Chris Jones' performance, best player on the field outside of Patrick Mahomes that day, in my opinion, but not enough pass rush overall, in my opinion as well. And I think particularly from the other end spot, nothing against Mike Dana. I think he did get a pressure recorded. That's something. And I thought he played the run well. I thought he put a lot of effort out, but it's just not getting there. And I think, you tell me, is it the physical absence of Frank Clark that diminished that in his personal pass rush? Or is it the figurative presence of Frank Clark giving everyone an edge, setting everybody up to be more productive and more attacking in their demeanor?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the physical part of it. I mean, you know, not only was it just a depth issue, because now you're down a defensive end in a game in which the heat index was ridiculous on Sunday, especially in the first half of that game. I think it got a little bit better in the second half when the sun started getting behind the stadium and there was a little bit more shade on the field. But that was brutal. I mean, and you saw it. I mean, as far as, you know, the Chiefs resting Chris Jones and Jaren Reed in the third quarter to keep them fresh for the fourth quarter, depth was certainly an issue. So, you know, they could just use the physical presence of of Frank Clark out there. But I think you nailed the other part of it too, which is that they had a real hard time with the edge against the run in particular, without Clark out there. And you certainly saw it, you know, Joshua Kane, though, I thought had a really kind of rough day and a couple of snaps there on the edge. And Mike Dana, you know, some of the other guys too. Frank Clark, you know, even though he's been kind of up and down, you know, as a pass rusher at times, injury wise, against the run, he usually does a pretty good job of at least setting that edge a little bit and helping out. And that's got to at least help a little bit. But, you know, give credit to the Browns, too. They've got a really good offensive line. Even when Wills, you know, left, I mean, they were still kind of holding their own for a little bit. I think that that eventually caught up with them in the fourth quarter. But, you know, Clark coming back will absolutely add some teeth. So you gotta hope it will help a little bit. Now, hey, getting pressure on Lamar Jackson is going to be tough because it's going to be usually the other way around. Usually it's Lamar Jackson putting pressure on you. So we'll see what kind of help that can be, but certainly keeping Jackson in the pocket and not letting him get on the edges. You hope Frank Clark's back because he's had success against him in the past.
He's going to be key in that. And we'll get to the quarterback in the next segment. Mahomes' performance was certainly unique in another way, but I do want to take a look at a finer tooth comb with you. But on the defensive side, sitting there for the moment, this is going to be, I think the next game in particular will stress the linebacker level even more. Is there anything that you saw that has you optimistic that they can move on and improve against another team that wants to run next week? Clearly, they're not as good as Chubb and Hunt. It's just not the case. It's not going to be there. But from what you saw from Bolton, what you saw from Ben Neiman, the team moved on from Amari Cobb to this afternoon, I believe. So a guy that I think still has will capabilities in him. It looks maybe it can be a rotational thing where he comes back. But as they're set up right now, is that linebacker level more important against the upcoming opponent, or was it enough against the Browns that has you comfortable?
Yeah, I mean, this linebacker group, I think right now you're just kind of trying to hold their own a little bit until you get Willie Gay back, because he was such an important piece of what they were planning from that group, and really just having to ask a lot more from Nick Bolton early than they were expecting to. The good side is that, I mean, Bolton in general responded. I mean, he had a good game, at least from a tackling standpoint. I know Football Focus probably gave him a pretty good grade there. And hey, we can talk about PFF sometime, but that's another conversation. But hey, when they like your guy, go ahead and give him a plug there. But other aspects of it, yeah, I mean, it was kind of a rookie up and down game for Bolton. It wasn't perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but I think it's good that he saw some things that he's going to see coming up. And so far, he's been learning from his mistakes. So I think you feel good about that. I mean, I still think it's going to be a while before Bolton's completely comfortable. Yeah. But the good thing is that he tackles, and he's sure-handed that way. Really, the other big question I have about the linebacker group this week is going to be Anthony Hitchens and the elbow. Don't really have a firm grasp yet of just how serious it is. Obviously, he went back into the game. Right. The concern just being on elbow injuries is that can zap some of your ability to wrap up guys. We've seen it before with guys with elbow injuries. It doesn't mean it doesn't hurt your legs. You can still be there to make a play. But, you know, can you make the play? Can you get guys down if that you've got a wing that's damaged? That's going to be the tough part for Hitchens. So we'll see how he is this week. You know, if it is serious or anything that's going to limit him in any capacity, we'll see. But I thought the linebackers and as a whole, I thought got a lot of experience. But I'm really curious, you know, if they're going to be getting the same number of snaps this week. Because I'm expecting that the Chiefs will probably be going with Matthew back with a lot of three safety looks and a lot more of Dan Sorensen in the box. So if that's the case, it's definitely going to be taking one of those linebackers off.
And I think you have to with the speed of Lamar in order to have Dan in there. Dan missed five tackles last week, though. Yes, he made a great play at the end of the game, but this was an up and down game for Sorensen as well, you guys. Let's not forget that. But I think the whole thing that I'm looking at is, in order to do all of that or any of it, especially in the dime looks, you have to have Juan Thornhill. It feels like he returned in the second half. Do you feel that's sustainable? Do you think that turned a corner, or was it just he clued in on what they're doing and still going to be a little hunt and trying to find the acorn here in the next couple of games?
Yeah. You know, I mean, we've been trying to dissect exactly what the plan for Juan Thornhill is. And we've probably just been reading too much into it all along when the reality of it is that, I mean, everything that the Chiefs have done and said this entire offseason and through training camp in the preseason is Tyrann Mathieu is one of your starting safeties. Dan Sorensen's your other starting safety, and Juan Thornhill is your guy that's going to come in sub packages. And the Chiefs are going to play sub packages 60 to 70% of the time. So Juan Thornhill is going to be a ipso facto, de facto, whatever you want to call it, starting safety. I mean, he's going to be out there a lot. So don't fret too much. But at this point, the Chiefs want Dan Sorensen out there all the time. And I mean, I think part of it is just because he is the guy who can move around so much. They can put him in the box, which is something that I don't think that they're really looking for Thornhill to do. Right. Sorensen in this game, I mean, do you want him spying on Lamar Jackson? No. But do you want him covering Mark Andrews? Do you want him to be able to provide some support in the run game? If you're going to have a guy who you want to be able to, you know, have a third safety who can play the run. Yeah. I mean, that's your guy there. So, you know, is Thornhill as part of that package to try and spy Jackson a little bit? He could be part of that plan. And I thought it was really interesting at times, you know, that we did see, you know, a little bit of Sorensen playing the deep safety on Sunday. Normally that would be Thornhill, but this time around, you know, they mixed it up and we're switching those guys around. So I think this weekend, at least you got the indication about what Juan Thornhill's role is. It's the number three safety and he's going to play a lot. So don't worry about it.
Yeah. I'm going to try to do that too. And I'm also going to try any more Matrix 4 references as we're going to get over to the offensive side of the ball coming up next. Tell me if this sounds familiar. You've got one device to catch the live game, another one that lets you stream your favorite shows, and you're watching sports highlights on your phone. That's tough enough. Now you've got your neighbors, best friends, pals, dogs login for all the good stuff. I want to tell you a way to simplify your life and make all your entertainment that you love without any hassle, and it's a great way to get all your television together in one place. It's called DirecTV Stream. And it brings live TV and on-demand favorites together like never before. And you can watch all your favorite sports, movies, and shows in one single place. It means that there's no more juggling remotes or hunting for them in the couch. And you don't need to buy another device ever. And the best part is there's no annual contract. Get rid of the clutter, get rid of the confusion, and get all of your TV together with DirecTV Stream. You can learn more at DirecTV.com. That's DirecTV.com. Compatible device is required. And content varies by package. We got to tell you about our pals at Built Bar, and you've heard us talk about them before, and we just can't stop because we enjoy them so much. Whether it was the special flavors like the coconut brownie chunk or the grasshopper cookie, like there are a number of things that make them very unique that they make their bars for their customers. And at the end of the day, they're all nutritious in terms of right around 130 to 180 calories is the range, all with 17 or 18 grams of protein in one bar. And low sugar, low net carbs, like 5 grams of sugar on the average. And it comes in handy when you're trying to fulfill your workout regimen, whatever diet plan you're on, whatever you're trying to do nutritionally, Built Bar can help you there. And at the end of the day, they taste great. And that's what it comes down to with all their flavors, whether it's the coconut chunk brownie, whether they're standard flavors like salted caramel cookies and cream and German chocolate. Mint brownie is one of my favorites. There's a lot out there. I think you will find something that you can enjoy today. Go to built.com and use the promo code LOCKED15. You'll get 15% off of your next order. Use that promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off of your next order at built.com. All right. So we made it through what, 15 minutes of a show, and we haven't spoken about Pat Mahomes yet. I think that's good.
Why bother?
No, I know. Right? what's the story here? My big thing. And this is what I need you to straighten me out on, because I'm probably reading too much into it at this. I felt like the thing that we've been discussing all offseason about him being more mature, about taking what's there and not necessarily trying to make deep strikes, although he had the big play, the 75-yarder, obviously that was an opportunity. I felt like he managed his impulse to go downtown a lot better than we saw last season.
Yeah, I thought so too. I mean, especially on that opening drive of the second half. And I still think that opening drive, we talked a little bit about it the other night, still think that was a huge part of this game, because the offense coming out there, controlling the ball for 7.5 minutes, keeping the Cleveland defense on the field, wore them down. I think it slowed down the momentum of the Browns offense a little bit, but most importantly, gave the Chiefs defense a break, which they badly needed. Because in the fourth quarter, you know, who looked the freshest? It was the Chiefs defense. I mean, of every unit that was out there, I mean, the Chiefs defense into the fourth quarter looked almost as good as the offense. I mean, it was sharp, and I think that was a big part of it. And another big part of it was that, you know, the Chiefs didn't get away from the run, even though they weren't running the ball particularly successful. They still made a halfway commitment to run the football, which meant running some time. And this could have very easily, that could have very easily have been a 3.5 minute touchdown drive for a touchdown, you know, score for the Chiefs opening the second half. And if they get into a shootout with the Browns, man, maybe they don't win that. I mean, I think that's how key that drive was as far as its length. And, you know, and a big part of it was just taking what was there and not the deep shot. But then again, I mean, you know, as soon as you're the Browns and you do something silly like leave Tyreek Hill in single coverage on a play like that, doesn't matter whether there's pressure or not. I mean, if there hadn't been the pressure that got Mahomes out of the pocket, he would have taken the shot the Hill earlier. Mm-hmm. I mean, he had Hill one-on-one deep. Yeah. The ball was going that direction. I mean, you could see it as far as the moment Mahomes saw that what he had coverage-wise, he was going to get that ball to Tyreek Hill no matter what.
Hey, folks, if you're an opponent, you're scouting, if you're pro personnel for the Ravens or the Chargers, go watch the Vikings preseason game, because it happened then and it happened again last week. It'll happen again if you let it. Be careful.
Two things I do not understand how any NFL team can let happen. One is that you never put Tyreek Hill in single man coverage, ever. Just never do it. And two, you never, never put Tyreek or put Travis Kelce in the red zone in single man coverage. I mean, just no.
You're just not that good. I don't care who you are. It is what it is.
If you're not bracketing Hill on the most of the field and then bracketing Kelce in the red zone, quit.
You're doing football wrong.
You're just doing it wrong.
Yeah. Well, outside of the stars, obviously they carried the load. Did you see any indication from who did get targets, who used them, who made the most of their day? Like, do you see any development of who might be a steady influence at the X, at the wide receiver two spot?
You know, I mean, I haven't gotten to the point of looking at the film for an in-depth look at just how guys were running without the ball that much, or their routes when the ball wasn't coming their direction. And I have a little bit of what I saw didn't encourage me. I mean, because I saw, you know, Hardman and Robinson, you know, when they knew the ball wasn't coming their direction, they weren't selling a couple of those routes. And that's a problem. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that, you know, that's the one thing that Sammy Watkins generally always did, is that even if the ball wasn't coming his way, he sold it. And that's something that you just got to do. I mean, you know, if you're going to be at the level of a Hill, a Sammy Watkins, I mean, you got to sell every route. And that's just not happening. But the thing is that when the Chiefs get behind, Patrick Mahomes relies on who he can trust and who he feels the comfort in. And no matter what he says, no matter what Andy Reid says, watch, let your eyes tell you what's happening. The two guys that he trusts are Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill. There's no one else right now that he trusts in those situations. So when the Chiefs are in a game where they're behind for three quarters of it, you're going to see a box score just like that, that has all these targets going to Hill and Kelce, and everybody else is fighting for table scraps. And that's going to happen unless the Chiefs are in a blowout. If they're in a blowout, everybody's going to get a ball and everybody's going to be happy. But right now, those other guys, no one's distinguishing themselves. And the really important thing is that no one at this point has earned that trust from Mahomes to be one of those guys in crunch time.
And that's what it is. It's that clicking those boxes so that he trusts you in that situation. Man, I hope that someone does emerge. I'm interested in that in this matchup, folks. We're going to tell you more about that. Matt will be on RGR later in the week, and we'll have the game preview for you on Friday. Don't miss that. But in that vein, Clyde Edwards-Helaire didn't get as much going against that particular front as maybe I had hoped with the new offensive line. And I think, do we see another instance where they take a drive maybe to start the third quarter to dedicate to grinding it out a little bit to try to get Clyde going on the ground? Or is this just simply, that was that front, this is a different game, we're not going to worry about it?
I think it's probably more of the latter, just a different front. I mean, you know, if anything, what we've seen with the Ravens right now is that I'm just not sure that their front seven is as scary as it's been in the past. And that's the case. If that's the case, the Chiefs should be able to run the football, and there should be opportunities. I mean, based on what you saw the Raiders were able to do and some of the stuff that Josh Jacobs did, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I think that the Chiefs should be able to run the football a little bit. The one thing that still, you know, surprised me a little bit was just that, you know, they didn't get Jerick McKinnon involved in much at all. And once again, maybe that was just the nature of getting behind and going with the guys that you trust. Be really interested to see, you know, him get a bigger role as the season goes on. And I think that's probably going to happen. I still think that, yeah, I mean, if you're the Chiefs, you're going to be playing winning football. It's going to mean getting Clyde and Jerick a lot more touches than they got in week one.
Last thing, to set all this up and what's going to happen next week as well. Three rookies started. Creed had a very, very quiet day. I don't think I ever heard his name on the broadcast. I wasn't yelling at him at all through the television. Always a good sign.
Don't hear an offensive lineman. Exactly. It's good news.
How did you feel about Trey Smith and Lucas Niang as their first outing? And how do you feel that they can go from here?
Yeah, I mean, I thought Trey was kind of the same way. I mean, you know, the only time you really heard his name was when he pancaked a guy, which, you know, that's always good. You know, and really the toughest things I think that you saw with Niang and Brown both is just that they're still getting to know Mahomes, and Mahomes is still getting to know them, because I think the toughest thing is really just still, you know, establishing that pocket and where they have to walk guys, especially when they're trying to take them downfield. I mean, that's where I thought we saw a little bit of the pressure issues. Was maybe, you know, them still not having a really good grasp of where they need to set that pocket. Mahomes is still kind of learning, you know, where guys' strengths and weaknesses are as far as where he can kind of scramble and go. So I thought there was a couple of times, and there was, and definitely, you know, the one sack there at the end, that was definitely kind of the byproduct of exactly that. You know, it was just a nature of those guys not really setting the pocket that Mahomes was expecting, and then Mahomes not really having a good grasp at where his escape valves were. That's going to happen. I mean, until these guys all, you know, get to know each other, and let's face it. I mean, other than, I mean, the Chiefs defensive line was probably the toughest group that they faced in training camp. Yep. In the preseason, because they didn't face anybody's number one defensive line and defensive front. So,